Welcome to the Roma Press Podcast with Jun Solano and Andy Mattioli.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Roma Press Podcast. We hope you are well. It's victory. We should put all the Patreon money towards licensing some sort of celebratory music, Andy, because Roma 4-1 over Lecce, the first victory since Halloween. There's a metaphor in there somewhere. I don't have time to find it. Before we get into everything, patreon.com/RomaPress, get early access to episodes and more. And of course, thank you to our newest patron, Pete Earls. Pete, thank you for your support. And again, thank you to all of our other wonderful patrons who were up until the middle of the second half. Andy, as you would imagine, they were very calm, collected, balanced, didn't want to throw or hurl anybody off of the roof of a building. Everybody was very, very relaxed.
Polite.
Very polite in a match where, listen, when you are 15th in the table, and I had to remind some people of this in the group chat, when you are 15th in the table, there are very few things to which you can afford to be critical of. We're not at the point where we can talk about, the fluidity of passes. We're not at a point where we can talk about certain movements in the attack or the midfield. We are at a point where if you get a victory, you shut up. Regardless of how the victory comes about, regardless if it's against the team that I think statistically is the worst against Roma, particularly at home, when it comes to ever needing to rebound or needing to gain some confidence. Lecce is the ugly one at the pub, the one that, you know, if you are lacking in perhaps some of your game, some of your smoothness, the one that come the end of the night, if you have lost out to all potential options,
shame on you.
There is one left, and that comes in the form of Lecce.
Shame on you.
And by the way, I somehow missed this, and we didn't bring it up, but Gianpaolo, we make fun of every single manager who seems to be recycled in Italian football.
I think he's more of a meme now than even Eusebio Di Francesco. I think Gianpaolo is really, and also just, you know, I look at him and he reminds me of an uncle of mine. the resemblance is uncanny. Like, this is the type of guy that you find, you know, on a Saturday afternoon, just going through a bag of chips in one of the cupboards, you know, and you ask him, what are you doing? And he's just standing there frozen, you know, and then he sits down on the couch and he watches Italia Uno or something. I imagine that this is the kind of guy that Gianpaolo is whenever he's not coaching and not getting himself humiliated in Serie A or Serie B.
So, the story of him at Brescia, for those of you who are not so sick,
that you were, where he disappeared, yes, where just, he disappeared just out of the blue. He just stopped showing up. Just fantastic. So he was on a TV show that is meant to, you know, called Chi L'ha Visto, and there was a whole special about what happened to Marco Gianpaolo. Well, what happened is that years later, you know, he had this brilliant, well, not brilliant, but decent spell at Sampdoria in 2016-17. You know, it seemed like he was really doing something with that team. He's been living off of that then. Let's remember the disastrous 7-game spell at Milan. Sort of everything else then that followed is not really a highlight. But, I mean, this was a man who, you know, replaced Gotti. Lecce were doing terrible under Gotti as well, even though he's a manager I respect just because of how cold-blooded he looks. And just because of how fantastically funny he was at Udinese when he was interim coach, and he just kept saying, I don't want to be here, I don't want to be here, I don't want to be here. But Marco Gianpaolo comes in and sort of gives Lecce a bit of new life. You know, he even leads them in a really good game against Juve, which seemed to have, you know, undercut the Thiago Motta's progress at Juventus today as well. He gets another draw with Bologna.
Yes.
Gianpaolo is the perfect Serie A meme of a coach. Tonight, if we talk about the results that we expect this team to make along the way, this is the result that we should have expected tonight. Like after those recent three games, even Ranieri, we all felt like something was brewing. Like something, you know, like there were signs that the team was doing some things better than in the past, and we just needed a victory to prove that, yes, indeed, it's not a mirage. This team is making minor improvements steadily.
They are. I just want to go back very quickly to the Gianpaolo thing because, again, you have to read the story. I'm sure just the brief narratives on it will not do it justice. When we say disappeared, we are quite literally saying it wasn't like he stayed home for 3 days. We are quite literally saying.
No. Nobody knew where he was.
Disappeared. No. For 72 hours, they could not get in touch with him. Nobody knew where he was. They went to his residence. They could not find him there. He would not answer.
He was
answer.
The coach. He was the acting coach.
Yeah, yes. he disappeared. We mean it in the literal sense. It's a fantastic story. If you have time, go look at some of the Italian sources on it. It is well worth the read. And a guy who, again, much like the likes of Ballardini, Sergio Cosmi, we can go on and on and on. At nine lives, the guy just will not die. And we saw more of his champagne football tonight. I think they ended with one shot on target, three in total. And very rarely did they created some chances and some dangerous opportunities right until that final part. They were missing that last part, but I would say, even though it says 4-1 on the scoreboard, Andy, this was the, albeit except for the 20,
oh, when,
final
when
20
you were
minutes,
sitting,
this
when,
was.
When you were sitting 1-1, it should have been easily 3-1 at point already.
Oh, easily.
So we could be talking about 6-1 tonight. It's a recurring theme for this Roma, but that's why it's already a miracle that we scored four goals.
It is a miracle. And again, there's a fine line, I think, here between being too critical and also understanding the situation. Because the fact of the matter is, when it comes to Roma against a club like Lecce, as you said, I think you should expect this. I think this is something that. This is business as usual, so to speak. But this season, nothing has gone according to plan. There has been such a curse of bad luck. And that's what I said in the first half, because you go into it, you're up 1-0. You waste, by the way, a host of opportunities after Salamakers gets the goal. I would just like to say, by the way, even on one foot, even on maybe even half of a foot, if only part of his left foot were to be broken next time, I don't want to see anybody else occupying a position on the pitch that Salamakers is able to do the job in. I was kind of surprised he was deployed in that position tonight. That is something we've seen from him last year under Thiago Motta. As we remember, he was playing in a wide attacking role in the 4-3-1 at Bologna. But he can play the role of wing back. However, you watch Zeki Salik, and it's very frustrating. Nonetheless, I mean, Andy, I don't know what to say other than the fact that he wears my favorite number that nobody has the balls to wear in football. Everything about the guy, I love. I swear, Roma, do whatever you have to do to make his deal permanent. Because, Andy, look, I think it says just about all you need to know.
Can I just say, yeah, I think that also says a lot about how much we've all been suffering through this spell of having to rely on someone like Zaleski, who's been clearly outside of the club's plans for an eternity. We've had to rely on Matias Sule, that was completely being misused in recent months. Because Salim Ayaker is the classic example of a player who's worked with a smart coach in Thiago Motta last season. He became smarter thanks to him, and he plays smart. Like, he came, like, when you look at, even at those few minutes that he played against Tottenham, what really stood out was how smart he was about where to be at what time. His positioning was crucial. Positioning is a matter of intelligence. Either you have it or you don't. I think one of the biggest flaws in Zaleski, at least at Roma, I don't know about the national team, but at least at Roma, is that he's never in the right place at the right time. And that's how simple it is. That really, it, like, that, those are the simple things. I think Salim Ayaker is the classic example of a player who comes into this context and brings something fresh to the table, and we're taken aback by the fact that it's not the same reheated meal.
That's true. And by the way, do we have to go back? Can you recall how many times he has scored against Roma, by the way? I mean, I always go back to that goal that he had with Milan. I'm fairly certain he scored in the one where Bologna won at the Olimpico last season. The guy punishes Roma all the time. You know, it would be like trying to think of other guys who famously, I mean, there are so many names that have punished Roma. You know, it would have been if, like, Roma went out and got Pazzini or something. Just finally getting somebody who punishes you, and finally you have the smarts within you to acquire the guy to get him on your side. His versatility, you said it perfectly as far as his awareness. I mean, he possesses something that even guys like Gianluca Mancini, his positional awareness. Gianluca Mancini, he got the goal tonight. I'm not going to complain too much, but watching this guy venture forward and get caught out so often, and having to watch Pizzilli, Paredes cover his backside for venturing too far forward half a dozen times tonight, it got old and a bit frustrating after a while. But Salim Ayaker, I couldn't agree with you more. The thing I found interesting was, I'm sure you saw what Ranieri had to say about Pellegrini in the pre-match. Clearly, I think the way forward is going to be this three at the back system. Yeah, I mean, we have seen Roma really since Jose Mourinho left, going in between three, and then De Rossi reverting back to four, and then Juric back to three at the back, and then Ranieri tries four, and in the middle of the match, he goes back to three. I think given the personnel, this three at the back is a way forward, and I think that allows you the most depth. The midfield is the most interesting portion of it to me. Pizzilli comes off the bench. You have Kone and Paredes. Speaking of cats that have nine lives, we go from this guy giving interviews every other week about how he can't wait to go back to Boca to now, what was it, yesterday or sometime this week, where he says, I'm only focused on Roma. I only care about Roma.
Yeah,
I mean,
I think it was about a week ago. And now we've been hearing and seeing more and more reports saying that
renewal.
He's staying, and then there is a possibility of renewal. I think that is already the Italian media jumping the gun, you know,
to try it. Of course, yes.
But even Boca Juniors president Riquelme came out in the open today and said, no, he wants to continue in Europe a little while longer. Which up until a month ago we were saying if this guy stays in the shape that he came from Copa America, then let him go. You know, let him go. He's clearly, his mind is elsewhere. He's done with this team. It was pretty clear that Paredes under Ivan Juric was going to leave in January. Fast forward, we're now not even mid-December, and Paredes is being talked about the same way he was being talked about during the second half of last season under De Rossi when he was performing.
It was
so
fantastic
well.
Tonight, man. He was. And I frankly think when you have him playing like this, he really is the perfect complement to Kone, who, if you want to speak about a turnaround, I mean, the guy was non-existent, completely a passenger, a spectator in the first few months. And he has had more good matches and performances under Ranieri than he did combined this season with Terossi and Juric. I mean, it's baffling. It's nice to see, obviously, but it just goes to show it really doesn't take much to get the most out of guys. Well, who would have thought you put guys in a position that they excel at? Wow. We finally figured out the recipe. My goodness. And I mean, look, just the midfield alone, man. Seeing what you got tonight from Kone, Paredes, Pizzilli coming off the bench with a fantastic finish from. Did you see that coming from Saúd? We saw more tonight from guys that.
Wait, what? What? The penalty or what?
He is not going to catch strays tonight. No.
John, your 2-year-old toddler could have done better on that occasion. So I don't know what the hell he was doing. Hey. He was flying like he was in some sort of action movie.
He was, but Zeki Salik isn't making that pass on that counter to, I mean, it was pinpoint. I have to give the guy his due. Yes, the penalty, so what? But, I mean, when he gives a pass like that, we really have to take the good with the bad, in my opinion. But what I saw tonight, it was pleasant, but in a way also frustrating because, you know, there is something about this team that I can't quite put my finger on. And I said in the group chat to the patrons, I said this at halftime when it's still 1-1 at the time, that there's no glaring mistake or glaring weak point of this team. It's almost like a mixture of consistent bad luck, which if it's consistent, I don't necessarily know if it can inherently be labeled as bad luck if it's reoccurring. And on top of that, just very brief periods of lapses of concentration, mediocrity, just the most tiny of lapses where they seemingly are punished every single time. So that's the frustrating part to me. I would almost feel somewhat better if it was Rui Patricio giving up goal after goal after goal. And it's okay. Well, you know, you're 15th, but with a half decent goalkeeper, things are looking different. I mean, the defense tonight, there are times where I see Gianluca Mancini, I'm thinking, where is he? And you have somebody in the midfield having to come back and make up for it. So the thing that, beyond obviously being ecstatic about the win, having to take a step back and actually calm down, because yes, tonight was important. When you are, again, I want to reiterate, when you are 15th in the table,
Are you going to kill the enthusiasm? No.
In fact, that was the first thing I said in the Patriot Reaction episode. When you are 15th in the table, there are luxuries you are not afforded. You got to take
everything. Soak it up.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. If you think we're going to do some breakdown that you would find on Opta where they're highlighting guys with the circle, and then they're doing arrows every which way, and it looks like something that Albert Einstein came up with. There's no way, because you completely miss the very obvious nature of what tonight means, because this is a team that had nothing happening. This was their first victory since October 31st. It has been over one month. Since you won in Serie A. So you cannot by any means come on, you and I come on to here and pick apart this guy, that guy, whoever that misses the gravity of the situation that they're in. It has been shit all season. However, I still think that the thing that bothers me most is I can't. What is it? Why are we in this situation to begin with? Yes, managerial upheaval, stuff with the owners. And by the way, this thing with Ryan Friedkin being present at the stadium. I don't know. This is one of those old Italian media things where you want to rip your hair out because It is a non-story, by the way. Like, it is only a story for the media, for the big newspapers. They are the ones who make a big deal of it. I can assure you, not a single player in that stadium, in the dressing room, thought, oh, shit. Ryan Friedkin is here. What are we going to do? Now the pressure is, give me a break. Give me a break. Come on. It makes no difference. But having to read that the entire week, and I have people messaging me, can I get the mobiles of this person from the Friedkin group, that person from the Friedkin group? I want to confirm if it is true, if Ryan Friedkin will be at the stadium. It felt like a joke after a while. Like, come on. This isn't that serious. We're not going to make a big deal of this, yeah? But the part that I kind of just step back and smirk at somewhat is, if you're Ryan Friedkin, this is a guy who does not have a very deep history into the sport of football beyond having entered into it 5 years ago, 4 years ago at this point. So when you are watching that first half, what are you thinking to yourself? Because you know Roma is playing. This Lecce is crap. They're terrible, horrible, whatever synonym you can find for shit inserted into there. They are a terrible team. And you entered into the break 1-1. Now, granted, could have been easily up 2 or 3-1, in my opinion. But this is a team, Andy, that just, are they bad? Is it bad luck? Is it a mixture of the two? And by extension, how do you resolve that? Because I cannot put my finger on it. There is some bad luck involved. I mean, they miss chances that you speak of a 2-year-old. My 2-year-old can bury some of these chances.
I know, but it's a bit of everything. We've been here since day one, saying what works, what doesn't. We've said that there were so many things that you could tell, you know, just a matter of twisting something, of changing something, just one or two things, and the team could be unlocked. But
yes,
the team never addressed those things, and then with time, the things that we were doing wrong amassed like a mountain became of them. So it becomes more difficult then to try and sort things out when you've neglected it and you've grown lazy and you've lost any sense of organization, when you've lost any sense of hierarchy. You don't know who's starting. You don't know who's the captain. There were so many things that we could not answer. You know, and Ranieri is clearly addressing that, giving some sense of order, putting players that are performing in the game. There are others that obviously are taking a step back, you know, Lorenzo Pellegrini, yes, Enzo Lefe. These are, yes, guys that have totally disappeared from the radar, yes. Tommaso Baldanzi. So it comes at a cost. The cost is players who are not performing or players who are not aligned with Ranieri's vision, unfortunately, will have a tougher time. The other ones, instead, will have their chance. And you see guys like Paredes thrive, guys like Manu Kone being completely reliable from game to game. And today we play without Dovbyk in the lineup, you know. Yes. You know, it's today we go into this match thinking to ourselves, how are we going to score? You know, I mean, our leading goal scorer in Artem Dovbyk is out. Roma, every time that they've had to change something or switch or adapt to a difficult situation this season, they've struggled. So as you said, you know, you have to take take this win in the same sort of perspective of a team that is 15th, that is struggling, that has struggled, that has not won since October 31st. Tonight is a night where Roma put all the things that they did well against Napoli, against Spurs, against Atalanta, and where the pressure tonight is on. Because unlike the previous three games where, you know, winning would have been too much, you know, fans were glad just by the effort of the team. But tonight you had to win. Tonight, yes, you had to go into this Olimpico and you had to deliver an answer. Ranieri knows this. He knows. He said it. You know, this team, this is the month. This is the month of truth. It starts with Lecce. And then it goes to Como. And then with Parma. And then Sampdoria. You know, so it's brutal. It's on paper, it's supposed to be easy, but it's not. Because if you're Roma, you're coming off months of insecurity. insecurity that has haunted this team and still haunts these players. I mean, Pellegrini is sitting on the bench for a reason.
Yes.
He's not sitting there because he's having fun. He's sitting there because Ranieri himself said, this guy is an introvert. This guy is struggling. This guy is in a tough spot, and I have to watch over him.
He is in a tough spot. As you mentioned, there are others who seemingly have gone or have gone from being crucial pieces to now being on the outs. I think what we saw tonight, as far as the tactics go, in my opinion, as far as what we saw from, again, going with the system of, you know, Salamaker's in attack next to El Shaarawy, Dybala, Zagizeli, Angelino on the flanks, and then again, Hummels flanked by Gianluca Mancini and Dica. That seems to be the path forward. That seems to be, at least for the time being, this is what Roma are going to have to do. Going back to something you said though about these guys who, just within the span of weeks, let's not forget Andy Enzo Lafay. Do we remember there were very few bright spots in the first few matches of the season? He was undoubtedly one of them. He was undoubtedly
No. Well, maybe not in the opening because he goes down the second match.
I'm sorry. Yes.
Under Ivan Juric, Enzo Lafay is one of the few players that, after returning from injury, for some reason, he immediately slots into Juric's lineup. And yes. And he is along with Kone, he's one of the few players that is consistently played. I mean, even Brian Cristante sits with Juric at some point. Enzo Lefebvre is there, always. Just like Hummels, you know. Hummels with Juric is a no-go. He even plays Cristante as a center-back instead of him. Hummels, since he's been on, we've had very positive performances, and from Hummels especially, like individually, he's been good. Perhaps he struggled against Napoli in those 45 minutes, a bit slower on the turn. But for the rest, are you kidding me? He was brilliant. He was everywhere.
Our patrons in the first half, man. That guy was catching strays again. I don't know. Maybe we see something different. I mean, there were some people in that first half, they were very critical of him. That is the thing that I find interesting, though. I mean, you brought up Brian Cristante. You want to speak of a trajectory of ups and downs as far as reliability goes and playing time. Think of just, if there is one name that you have to come up with over the previous handful of seasons, who has been the most relied upon.
Well, it must be said that now he's injured.
Well, yeah, so, well, right.
Tonight he's out because he's injured. Yeah. But definitely, yeah. I mean, you know, now we're looking at this team and, you can play without Cristante, you know?
And it is interesting to see as well that the ones who you would think are the most or the more creative forces along the lines of Pellegrini, Baldanzi. I would love to just pick the mind of De Rossi, Juric, Ranieri, because to have within the same season guys go from being the most relied upon to becoming an afterthought, it is interesting to me, because how could we have such a varying perspective? It's the same club, obviously under different managers, obviously with different ways of how they envision and want to play football. But does that factor in your mind at all for how you view, I guess, the potential of some of these guys? Because I find this thing with Sule, with Pellegrini, I find those two to be among the most interesting, because for a team that up until tonight has been lacking goals for months and months, those guys, those two, are among your most, on paper at least, creative forces. And it just seems like, at least Sule, for sure, I don't see where he is going to find a way to break into the starting lineup. Now, obviously, I think with Ranieri, there's at least somewhat of an opportunity for him, because with Juric, I mean, the guy was dead and buried, seemingly. And then with Pellegrini, the thing is, well, are you still putting him behind Dovbyk next to Dybala? Are you putting him in the midfield? Because I don't know how you even touch Kone and Paredes right now. I mean, you would be mad to break that up. So as far as the tactics go with some of the guys that we are used to seeing be relied upon, that we are used to seeing being out there match after match after match, they are no longer a guarantee. So I don't know what that means for them individually. And then as a squad and the depth goes, I mean, even to see, just think about El Shaarawy, man. That guy was collecting splinters in his backside early on in the season. And now he's starting. Now, he didn't do great tonight. He got an assist. Okay, fine. But it is just interesting to me that you see guys who, I mean, El Shaarawy, I'm not going to say the guy's finished because he can always pull at least one or two times per season. He saves you individually with some mad goal. So I'm not going to say he's finished because that alone is worth it. But to see the trajectory of these guys go from up to down and how they play and the minutes that they earn is fascinating to me because this team.
Well, but I just want to interject, John, that I think a lot with this team has to do with insecurity, with mood. These guys, this team is fragile. This team has, I mean, their morale was down to the floor as soon as De Rossi was kicked off.
Yes.
Even Ranieri right now, you know, he's asked, why is Pellegrini not playing? And he says this in very simple terms. He's not smiling. He's not happy. He's feeling the pressure. So why play him? And that's, you know, it's smart because I think everybody was asking for it, no? I mean, I thought everybody was happy to see Pellegrini on the bench, Cristante on the bench, because the thing was, oh, they're playing. They're constantly playing. Why are they playing if they're not performing? Well, now the answer is simple. Pellegrini specifically is not playing because the guy is not happy. He's not in a good moment. So sometimes it's as simple as that. We have to remember, players are also human. So someone like Pellegrini, going through a tough moment, feels the pressure. They're playing at the Olimpico, must-win match. What do you do if you're Ranieri? Do you force yourself to put him into the starting lineup just for the sake of having him out there? Or do you take a step back and think what's best for the team?
Well, absolutely. And when it comes to the Pellegrini portion of it, you know, as is often, or I shouldn't say often, as is usually the case when it comes to the captain, particularly if they are Romanista, this is going to become one of those questions where he is just peppered with it time and time and time and time again. They ask it multiple times at a press conference, and it becomes one of those talking points that when it comes to the supporters, it is not at all an issue. It is not something that is being debated upon. It is not something that anybody is complaining about, but it's almost as if many of these larger outlets are just going to keep forcing the issue and making you want to care about it because we cannot allow any extended periods of non-controversy with Roma. Just before we go here, the Europa League is back. I don't even know how we're supposed to give much enthusiasm to the idea of Roma in the final portions of this competition. I'm going to assume Roma defeating Lecce tonight did not change your outlook on how Roma, or if Roma would benefit more from being knocked out of this competition versus remaining in it. I don't know how you could watch tonight after Roma do not participate in Europe in this past week and want Roma to continue. But I don't know. Maybe Claudio Ranieri has a different view of it, where Roma, the team has to play their way out of this mess. The only way that they are going to continue to get out of the hole that they dug for themselves is by playing and getting results. So I'm curious to see how he approaches this. But now they have Braga. What are you thinking? I don't want to say ship it because they're not going to. They're not, as much as I wish, as this was like Roma of 2011. When did they play Slovan?
It's funny because you talk about it as if it happened yesterday, but we're talking about like 12 years ago, man.
Gosh. Come on, Matt. Viviani starting in midfield. I am so sick. I can probably name you half of that starting 11, but tonight is we won tonight. I don't want to go there.
the question is, how much would it impact the team if they took it easy midweek in the Europa League? You know, like, What if they went into this upcoming game and just, you know, let it go, you know, and lose perhaps? What does it do to their confidence? I think this is the question, because a win like tonight is a very fragile win, as in it can be a great starting point, but it can also put you at risk of thinking, oh my God, you know, the smallest mistake and we're back to square one. You know what I mean? Like, you're just going to go out there and what? And let the opponent humiliate you because you can't be bothered? Or are you going to show the same spirit that you've shown in these past three games, and including as well tonight against Lecce?
I couldn't agree more. I am curious to see the approach of Claudio Ranieri. Again, I can understand the mindset of having to play your way out of this.
He said it as always. He gave that classic answer. Yeah. For us, it's stimulating us. It's meant to stimulate us. It helps us. You know, it helps us be sharper. We want to compete. This Roma needs to compete, but we all know that. What we've seen from Rome, and mind you, the game against Spurs, again, if you don't play that game with that same fire, you risk losing yourself. So that game as well, it was crucial. It was a crucial game where you realized, oh my God, we can't go for blow with a Premier League side. In the state that we're in, we can still go out there in London against a hostile crowd and do what we did, you know? And that's huge. And you don't get that if you don't play on Thursday night.
We will see what happens. We will chat with you in a few days. Until next time, everyone. Ciao.
Ciao.